Hello and welcome to Cock Talk, the podcast. My name is Mark Paul, my co-host Joel Keith. Hi, Joel.
Hey, Mark.
Joining you here via a stream for the first time. I was excited to not have to drive an hour to your house. That was wonderful.
I was excited still, not to have to set up all the studio equipment.
True. Yeah. And you're excited that I'm not going to sneeze on you today or anything like that. It's perfect. On the show today, we are talking planes, trains, automobiles, John Candy, all the good things. We're going to talk about boats and trains smashing into things and derailing and breaking bridges. And we're going to start the show off with an interview that Joel did. Joel, tell us about that interview before we jump into that.
Yeah, so recently I had a good conversation with actually my business partner and friend of mine, Mike Stein. He's a wheelman for a company down in Texas, and he works towboats inland. So he is licensed and rated to drive or operate boats of any size, essentially inland in the U.S. His towboat capacity and barges are actually sometimes larger than what actually crashed into the Baltimore Bridge. So he's definitely going to give us a lot of great insight into the industry. How often these crashes happen? Is this out of the ordinary? You know, are the conspiracies founded in everything? So I'm excited to jump into that.
Yeah, why did I think you said tugboat at first? I pictured this like little tugboat with a guy with a huge ass beard and just a ton of chew in his mouth, wanting to take a group of four kids out on the ocean to go hunt sharks.
You want to go hunt some sharks?
Okay. All right. Well, we'll throw it to that interview. This is Mike Stein and Joel Keith chatting about the Baltimore Bridge incident.
Well, thanks for hopping on and doing this with me, Mike. I wanted to just chat for a few minutes with you. Obviously, we've got this big incident out in Maryland in Baltimore at the Francis Scott Key Bridge, where a big shipping vessel has run into the bridge and tore the whole bridge down because it hit a main support structure. And I know, based off of kind of your work, you're in the marine landscape quite a bit. So, real quick, what do you do, and what kind of gives you the insight to talk about this?
Sure. Yeah. So I work on a towboat in the Gulf Coast region. I work on multiple towboats, but I've been a licensed mariner for about 12 years now. I've been a wheelman for, I think, about the last seven. I have a unlimited master's, which means I can run pretty much any vessel in the United States inland waters that's not a passenger vessel. That's a different endorsement for passenger vessels. So yeah, that's what I do. Do mostly red flag barges on a towboat. So that's like clean chemicals, benzene, butadiene, all the different things, petroleum based products. I've dealt a little bit with dry cargo, but mostly liquid. Red flags, just you get paid more money for the most part for working with those chemicals.
Okay, cool. I don't know what half of that means, but it sounds really impressive. So I'll take your word for it. Working in more inland waters, how often do you work with larger vessels? I would assume probably not at the same size and degree as what we see crash into the bridge, but do you work with other larger vessels like that?
Yeah, I work with vessels of that size quite often, actually. And then we work, in tandem with each other a significant amount of time. I mean, anytime I'm in like the Port of Houston or Louisiana, like if you're in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, you're going to be working around ships constantly. So towing vessels, you're built a little different with a tow. But as far as like length and width, you'll be just as big, if not bigger, than ships, especially working on the Mississippi River. I think I was looking at the stats on that one, and the one that hit the bridge in Baltimore, it was 985, I think, was the length, by like 108 or 110. I don't remember what the exact stats were, but we're on tows larger than that quite often. Especially on the Mississippi River, you'll be on tows that are, 1500 foot long, 200 foot wide. It's pretty common.
Okay. Damn. Well, obviously there's, I think it's a hot button topic, not just because it took down an entire bridge, but also there seems to be quite a few conspiracy theories being thrown out around, and Talk Talk loves conspiracy theories. You know, there's, you know, people like Andrew Tate who's saying it looks like there was a cyber attack because seemed to have lost power twice before hitting the support structure. I think someone from Fox News had somehow connected it to being a border crisis. And then Alex Jones, was saying things about, he is agreeing that it could potentially be a cyber attack. Some people were saying, I saw on Instagram videos popping up where people were saying it looks like there were small explosions at different parts of the bridge, you know, kind of indicating that this might have been kind of a setup. It sounds like, though, that you might have a different take on, you know, whether or not it's actually a conspiracy theory or not.
Yeah, I think people just look for a story in general. So they come up with all these conspiracy theories. I listen to Alex Jones. Not that I think he's intelligent. He's just fun to listen to. And you could see how uneducated he was on the topic. Just listen to him talk. Any, you know, to his credit, he said, I'm absolutely not an expert on this. I'm just saying what I think. And that was, you know, 100% true. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it that just, I think a lot of people aren't understanding that makes it not make sense. For one, like, if, let's say it's a cyber attack or, you know, some type of political scheme. Like, I saw somewhere they were saying it was Russia or it was China or whatever the case is. It doesn't really make sense strategically to hit Baltimore. You pull up the list of literally anything that has to do with import, export, and the shipping industry. Baltimore doesn't come in the top 10 for any type of, you know, mass quantity for ports or harbors in the United States. So, you know, that right there, you're kind of just basically saying if somebody was to attack us for, you know, an act of war or something like that, they're just an idiot and they didn't know where to attack. On top of that, they picked probably the worst vessel to do it with. So you take like a cargo ship like that, they don't have anything that's really can be utilized as like an actual bomb. To where if they had targeted with like an LNG ship, liquid natural gas, it's literally a floating bomb. I mean, those are pressurized, flammable gases and liquids. So if they would have used something like that, and they have super tankers that are just the exact same size of that, they could have took out a whole city instead of just a bridge. And then, you know, on top of that, the bridge isn't really a strategic bridge. If you really wanted to cripple America, you would have hit like the Fred Hartman, which is right outside of Houston. It would have shut down all of America's economy within a week if they took that bridge out, because nobody would have been able to get in and out of Houston, which is the largest port in America. And same thing with like Huey P. Long down there in New Orleans. You take that bridge out, you're going to severely cripple the American economy. You take out Baltimore Bridge, you know, not to discredit anything that happened there, it's obviously a tragedy, but it's like you hurt the city. Nobody else in America really cares other than the loss of life there.
Yeah. And even too, I mean, was it 1:30 in the morning that the bridge got hit? So you're not even doing it at a strategic time to, you know, potentially catch anyone during rush hour traffic that's on the bridge themselves. Doesn't seem to be like a strategic attack. And then even so, like, you know, there's a theory that like, oh, well, it's kind of like a, you know, smaller test version, see how, what they can get away with, what they can do, and then maybe implement it at a larger scale. It's like, well, then you kind of just sounded the alarm on that intentionally. So that doesn't really make sense to me either. But what about kind of the cyber attack potential element of it? You know, I'm not familiar with ships of that size. Like, you know, I don't know how much you know about the ship, but was this, you know, sure. Do you know if this was a newer ship? How much electronics go into ships like this? And then is that realistic for, you know, if electronics go down, do they have backups, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, so I think that ship was built in 2015. We were talking about it earlier. So a ship that's built that new, it's going to be predominantly electronics. All your steering's going to be electronic. Your throttle's going to be electronic. Most everything on that boat's going to be electronic. But it's not really susceptible to a cyber attack because it's not connected to the internet. It's not like you can just log in and take over that ship. Everything is going to be an internal system. Like they're going to have, you know, a generator with a redundancy system of multiple backup generators that are going to be online. So if one goes down, they'll move to the next one. But there's no outside connection other than, you know, being hooked up to like an AIS system, which is what they're going to use for navigation to see other vessels and stuff. And then they'll be using, you know, a navigation system like Rose Point, which is just electronic charting. So that's, you know, instead of writing out paper charts, they look at it on a computer. Those are really the only things that they're going to be utilizing that somebody could, you know, quote unquote, cyber attack. And on top of that, you know, for the most part, you don't really need those things. We ran ships for years and years and years, hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, without ever having any of that stuff. Bridges are lit very specifically at night, along with, you know, channel markers, everything else. They're designed for that. So when you don't have your systems working, you can still navigate. I've been in that, you know, situation many, many times. So it makes no sense to say it's a cyber attack. I think everything points to just a mechanical failure and it just, you know, real shitty luck in a real shitty situation. I think post-accident, there's a lot of stuff that you could say doesn't make sense, like federal government coming in and saying, hey, we're going to pay for all of this. That doesn't make any sense. That's never happened before. So, you know, if you want to put a tinfoil hat on with that and say, well, this just looks like an opportunity for the Fed to embezzle money, politicians to embezzle money, that is something I could definitely get behind and say there's a lot of evidence of that. But to say that it was a terrorist attack or it was any fault of a human intentionally, I can't see it. I see accidents like this happen on, you know, a weekly basis when I'm on the water. And thankfully, it usually doesn't happen in a situation like that where, you know, they're running into a bridge or anything. And with the communication and all the systems in place with the Coast Guard and just, you know, traffic in general, mariners are very, very good at helping one another. It's a fantastic community out there on the water. Usually we can catch things before they get that far out of hand. Unfortunately, sometimes you don't. And I think that's what you see here.
So your kind of thought is, even with, you know, the footage and seeing the electronics seemingly go in and out a couple times, that this looks more simply like a mechanical issue, a failure on the ship, and then it just kind of ran into the post there.
Yeah, so normally in a situation like that where you're experiencing any type of mechanical failure, but especially loss of steerage or loss of propulsion, you're going to notify the local Coast Guard traffic. So you're going to get on designated radio channel. You're going to say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. Keep an eye on me. I would imagine they did that because it sounded like on some of the articles I read, they had already notified local police and local police had cleared traffic from the bridge. They didn't have a ton of time to do it. They only had a couple minutes. But you got to think if they notify the Coast Guard, then Coast Guard notified local authorities dispatch, you know, the reality is there's a huge delay between those two things. So you can imagine that they did do all their proper, you know, due diligence and notify Coast Guard, say, hey, we're experiencing issues. They went into their emergency procedures, probably fired up the next generator. And that generator failed from, you know, poor maintenance or whatever the case is, just mechanical failures. They happen, especially on the water. They happen a lot. I think that's what you see is, you know, you see lights go on and off. And then I believe they had a quote from the Pilots Association and there in Maryland, and they were quoted saying it was a, you know, full blackout on the vessel, which is, you know, vessel dead in the water. They have no control over anything. They tried to drop an anchor, but you drop an anchor on something that weighs 95,000 gross tonnage, it's not going to do anything. I mean, you might as well drop a shoestring.
So even though, you know, the anchors are built for that specific ship size, potentially carrying loads and things like that, even dropping anchor won't slow it down or bring it to a stop?
Well, an anchor is not designed to slow down. Anchor is designed to hold a vessel in place that's already stopped, the mooring. So, you know, a lot of times, even with that, if you have strong tides or current or whatever the case is, you'll still see ships drag anchor. And that's from a dead stop, they'll start dragging an anchor. So if you put that and it's already moving at like 5 or 6 knots, you're not doing anything with an anchor. It's very surprising. It would be very surprising to me if it doesn't come out reported that there was severe damage to the anchor base from them dropping it and trying to drag it.
Mm. Yeah, so I think that definitely goes against a lot of the rhetoric I'm seeing online. Obviously, this is very new. It just happened yesterday, but you know, there's not a lot of people from what I can read and from what I'm seeing that are talking about this kind of emergency procedure that you're talking about, like where they've notified all these people before anything happened. So it kind of removes this whole conspiracy theory out of the conversation, because if that was the case, they wouldn't want to notify anyone. They'd want to, you know, take the bridge down with as many people on it to create the most amount of damage.
Yeah, exactly. It's people that don't understand the industry, just making assumptions and trying to get clicks from what I can tell. Like I said, you know, the way it's being handled after the fact, I definitely think there's a lot of concern there. I don't think, you know, our tax dollars should be paying for the mistakes, regardless of where the mistake lies, of another company. So I think there's a lot of stuff to question there, but as far as the actual incident itself, as far as I can tell, it looks like purely mechanical error. There's nothing they could have done better other than just not leave the port.
So I would imagine then at that point, they probably experienced the failure after they had already disembarked from the port, not something they probably saw while they were at port.
Yeah, most vessels are going to have a pre-departure checklist. So you're going to go through all of your wheelhouse stuff. So you have a list of things in a bridge that makes you not seaworthy. It means like you can't take off. And that's basically every electronic system. So you have to go through system by system and check every single system in your bridge, even redundancy. So let's say you got 35 radars up there. All 35 have to work. If one doesn't work, even though it's a redundancy, that still makes you not seaworthy. And so you have to have that fixed before you leave. And I'm sure all those things are going to be going, you have a black box on a ship, just like you have in an airplane. They're going to go back. They're going to look at that and say, was everything working as intended when they left the dock? And if there wasn't, then obviously that was a massive human error. But assuming that they did their job as they're supposed to, everything was working when they left. And then between them leaving and them making contact with the bridge, they experienced mechanical failure.
Well, looking at the pathway that I've seen in some of the kind of the analogies that were built out, it looked like all they did was make a U-turn and then they hit the bridge. So it wasn't like that they were away from the actual port for very long. They were still really close. So I can't imagine that if they did a proper checklist ahead of time, that they wouldn't have seen something that probably should have kept them from departing.
Yeah. And stuff goes wrong fast. I've come off dock before with vessels and go through my entire checklist properly, document everything properly. And as I'm pulling off the dock, I'll lose propulsion. I'll lose steering. Now, you know, thankfully, I've always worked with a very great crew and we've always been able to recover quickly. And I've never had any incidents, you know, to any type of significant degree, but it happens. Like and companies know that. That's why they are so significant with those checklists and making sure that everything operates as intended as often as possible before you go on a voyage, because that's just the reality of it. You put a bunch of mechanical stuff and a bunch of electronics on the water, it's going to break.
Yeah. I guess you don't really think about that. You're adding electricity into a flotation device and then submerging it in water for however many years that boat's, you know, lifespan is. You kind of mentioned that you before that you see this happen like regularly, like pretty much a weekly basis where there's incidents with boats. I would imagine probably not to this scale, like you said, but in those incidents, I guess who's usually, I would imagine the company that owns the boat would be, you know, held liable for the damages, right?
Yeah, that's usually going to be your first target that's going to be liable. It's very rarely 100% fault to one company, because that company is going to be on a contract with a customer. You're going to have other people involved, especially when you get into unions and who's crewing the vessels and stuff like that. So usually you're going to have, you know, a wide berth of who's taking blame for that. But it's never the local government. It's always going to be the people that were actually associated with the vessel.
Yeah. So that, like you said, like why in the world would the government come in and say, hey, we're going to pay for this?
Yeah. I mean, the bridge didn't jump out in front of them. They went and hit the bridge. So it just it makes no sense.
So if you said the boat looked like it was like 2014 or 2015 that it was built. I mean, that's in boat lifespan. Is that relatively new?
That's brand new. Yeah. Lifespan of vessels is significantly longer than that. You know, it's a little different depending on the type of vessel you have, but there's plenty of ships out there that are 20, 30, 40 years old.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, the build quality of the boats, how they're able to, especially ones in saltwater, you know, you would imagine there'd be, you know, additional factors to take into account.
So all that stuff's regulated pretty significantly. The issue usually isn't build quality, it's usually maintenance quality. How well is your crew maintaining a vessel? And when you get into foreign flag ships, those are things that we can't regulate as hard as we can with, you know, local vessels. So that would be the main thing that I would look at, is how well is this vessel being maintained? You know, were they doing all the proper diligence with, you know, maintaining in main engines, generator engines, all those things.
Yeah. I mean, this is a lot of great information. I think this sheds a lot of light around this situation. Again, I'm the first one to be like, okay, you know, who's attacking who? Is this a cyber attack test? Like EMP, was it, you know, web base or whatever? Like, but this truly does just sound like, man, it's just a really shitty situation.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, I think our foreign enemies are a lot more intelligent than the, you know, do something like this. It's a terrible thing. I don't want to make any, you know, I don't want to downgrade how significant this was, just with, you know, loss of life, just damages in general, to a city, to a bridge. But as far as just like a strategic element, there's none. It's not a strategic port. It's not a strategic bridge. If you were wanting to just do a, you know, a terror attack, just to, you know, inflict genuine terror into the, you know, population of the United States, you still wouldn't have done it like this. There's way more significant ways they could have done it. And I think our enemies are way more intelligent than to just do this.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. Unfortunately, you have to give them credit where credit is due with intelligence. And I definitely think that they're a lot more intelligent than that. But well, man, I appreciate taking a few minutes to chat about this. Again, I knew you'd be a subject matter expert for this and give some insight that I think a lot of people are missing right now. And it'll probably be a few more days at least before more information comes out and other people are going to step up and say something. But at least for the people that listen to Cock Talk or watch us on YouTube and things like that, we'll get some insider information, if you will.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to pay attention to here is, what does our government do with it? We should not be paying for this as U.S. taxpayers. This should be somebody else paying for this. I think, not to get political, but it seems like our politicians care about everybody except Americans right now. Because every time something happens, they give money to them. They don't ever look out for us.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree. That's a whole nother rabbit hole that we probably could spend a whole couple hours on. But I appreciate, you know, like I said, you chiming in, giving us your thoughts and opinions and kind of some expert inside information on the industry and what we should be looking out for in the next few days.
Yeah, that was fun. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, welcome back. Thank you again to Mike Stein for joining us for that interview. Pretty interesting stuff, because that's from somebody who actually knows their stuff. That's not just a guy on the internet who's done a few searches, which would totally be me. You know, you can always conjure up a conspiracy, and some of what makes conspiracy theories be put into a negative light is looking for a conspiracy every single time. And I think that listening to Mike makes you go, okay, I understand this a little bit better. This is something that's not normal in what the outcome was, but normal as to what happened in the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of the few instances in which you have someone that you can come on and you can get real information from that, you know, at least for me and for you, I know for us specifically, like knowing Mike, knowing the type of person he is, working with him all the time, like it's not someone who's like, hey, I need my 15 seconds of fame. I want to say some crazy stuff in order to like go viral on a video. Like it's not the type of person he is. But he comes from a background of clearly understanding the industry, knowing, you know, how often accidents happen. I mean, like you said, on a weekly basis, he's getting calls from the Coast Guard saying, like Coast Guard coming on the radio saying, hey, there was this barge or this ship, you know, accident or whatever, ships running into each other, cargo running into each other, failures.
But no one cares about the cargo running into each other. People care about right, the bridge being destroyed, which in fairness, I mean, that's millions and millions and millions of dollars. Like, I don't know how much I remember. There's this small bridge in the city that I grew up in. It was like in an area where it was not a busy trafficked area, but there was a bridge over the Rouge River. It was like a Rouge River tributary of in Detroit, like in Canton, Michigan. And this bridge went out, like it just was in bad shape. So they shut it down for like 2 years. And I saw the line item in the budget for the township, and it was like $3.5 million. For this little bridge that was probably, I don't know, 100 feet long, like not a very long bridge. And it, you know, I'm sure down below there's a lot of infrastructure. I understand why it costs a lot of money. Well, why it costs some money. $3.5 million still seems extreme, but I'm thinking if that costs $3.5 million, how much is this bridge going to cost? Yeah. Because that seems like a pretty intense repair.
But the craziest thing was that, you know, all of a sudden the Biden administration came out and just like, hey, you know, the government's going to foot the bill for that.
We got you.
Why? There's no reason for them to. There's no reason for the government to cover that. There are multiple insurance companies based on the accident that happened. There's like two or three insurance companies that would already be involved that would be responsible for footing the bill. Why all of a sudden is the government coming in and saying, so if you want to start a conspiracy theory, like Mike said, well, that's where you where start. Like, why are you funneling money somewhere? Are you laundering it essentially through the government? Like, that's where you really start asking questions.
Let's say it right. He wants me and you to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, he wants you to pay for it. He wants all of us to pay for it, not the insurance companies that are making hand over fist.
Right. I mean, Baltimore has already had it's tough go at it when it comes to government officials and corruption and just the town in general, especially during COVID, and how crime just skyrocketed during COVID. So now you're going to add on to that. Now not only does all Americans have to pay for it, but I'm sure a large portion of footing that bill is going to come on the taxpayers in Baltimore and in Maryland.
Yeah. Which is unacceptable and it's one thing to go, all right, here's where your insurance caps out. Now the government's going to come in and the federal government, I should say, because that's what Biden was saying. The federal government will cover it. That to me is acceptable. Like the idea of using federal money for infrastructure, I'm all about it. Like the whole Build Back Better thing with all the roads and all the money that's been going to the states, I'm all for that because I got to be able to go places and so do you. So go ahead and tax me to build roads. That is fine. I'm totally cool with that. I mean, don't give your best buddy and your brother all the contracts and let them charge you double for the road. No, that's a big problem. And well, that definitely was a problem in Michigan for a long time. Yeah. Oh my gosh. There were governors would give these guys that they had given, you know, huge donations and all this BS, just giving out contracts left and right that were so over the top. And that's what bothers me. But I don't care if that, like, that's one thing that my tax money should go towards. Put my tax money towards protecting me. Don't let me get like bombed in the middle of the night. I'd really prefer that. Like, give us a good military, you know, build me roads. And that's a good start. Like, police, fire, I'm all fine with paying for those things because I need those things. Like, we need those things in order to keep a functioning society. There's just a lot of other things that they're dropping coins into. Like all the research projects where they're like, oh, in this bill, we snuck in $10 million to research LGBTQ community advocates in Kenya. And you're like, what the frick? Why?
It's outlandish stuff. It's funny you say that, because yesterday I was, I do some freelance work. I used to be in broadcast and live production. So I do some teching, some audiovisual teching. And I was at a gig yesterday for Oakland County. And it was their state of the county for Oakland, Michigan. Mm. And dude, it was insane that they were like, oh yeah, here's an update on this project. We're initiating this and we've raised $20 million in funding. And it's like, okay, Oakland County's pretty big. Like, I can understand you found $20 million. And then it was like, and we found $50 million for this and $10 million for this. And I'm like, we're starting to rack up here. How are we making all this? Where's all this money coming from? Like, where are these grants coming from? Like,
wouldn't it be fun if you could take that conversation and piecemeal each portion where they said 50 million, 20 million, 10 million, 15 million, and like add it all up and see how much they talked about in the course of an hour long conversation?
I was doing the math in my head, and it was well over 100 plus million that they have found in grants and funding. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, where in the world is this money coming from? I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, and now Oakland County is one of the richer counties in the United States, even got a ton of money, but yeah, it's when you're talking tens of millions of dollars, or hundreds of millions of dollars, it's a different animal.
But we've got one thing from Mike though that I, you know, we were talking about it. One thing I thought was interesting, because as we're talking about it, and he's like, you know, this happens all the time. You know, we even talked about in the interview, the backup generator. So obviously it lost power as it's veering towards the bridge, and you can see the lights come on, lights go off, lights come on, lights go off over that course of a couple of minutes as it's headed towards the bridge structure. But you know, one thing he said that was really interesting to me, and he was like, you know, you're building a giant computer that can carry stuff, and then you make it float in the water. He's like, things are bound to fail. And even with backup generators, the backup generators can absolutely fail. And if you lose electronics, you're going to lose your mechanical steering. You know, and even if you try to drop an anchor, it's not going to do anything. The anchor is meant to help keep a boat in one place. And so if you're already traveling, he said, you might as well drop a shoestring, because it's not going to be effective at all, you know. And that to me is was really interesting, because I don't know a lot about boats. I spent some time on boats, but I'm not a boat guy. Right. And so I would have thought the same thing. Drop the anchor. Slow down. Don't hit the thing. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
You guys have like 9 anchors you can throw off the.
Right.
But I guess 9 shoestrings. I mean, that's the analogy we're going with. Then, you know, I guess. I think when you look at it from a, like, the total point of view of, yes, these absolutely happen. You know, of course, boat crashes are going to happen. There's these huge boats and there's thousands of them traveling every day. You know, there's so much. It's hard to wrap your head around it. How many goods are actually transported every day, every month? Like, it's just a constant stream. If you remember, a year or two ago, when there were all those boats just stuck in that canal, it just, there's so many boats, and they could be stuck in a place for 30 days and you're just sitting still. There is a lot going on that we don't have to think about. You know, we go, I want this from Amazon. Let me just, okay. And it's coming. And maybe Amazon, you're probably not taking a boat to get here in the immediate, but you buy something from like Alibaba. That's why it takes like 30 to 40 days sometimes for that stuff to get here, because it's coming on a boat.
Yeah.
And it has to actually be, has several points. But when you talk about what happened with that bridge, I think what is so shocking about it, first off, is the bridge, but also that it was just coming out of port. And you would think that you could understand a problem once you're like kind of out, you've been driving for a few minutes. It seems like they were like, all right, we'll see you later. Have a great day. And then power's out. Oh, everything goes to shit. And they hit the bridge really quickly. after coming out of port. And I think that is what is probably more unusual. I don't, yeah. Mike didn't really cover that specific portion, which is, I mean, yeah, you could say, well, yeah, they got unlucky. It happened really early as opposed to like out in the middle of the ocean where you lose power for a minute and you figure out how to get it back. But that is what I guess makes it suspicious, on top of the fact that the owner of the company of the boat is Mitch McConnell's sister-in-law, who died 6 days before the accident, which, I mean, you start to... It's weird. Is it odd? Yes, it's odd that the owner of that boat died, that they happen to be connected to maybe like top five most powerful senators in the United States Senate, maybe even, you know, probably top three, definitely on the Republican side. He's got tons of power and tons of clout. And you think, well, that's odd that she died. And then this huge incident happens that we really haven't seen in, you know, maybe in our lifetime, where it's been something so public about a boat accident. That's where you start to kind of go. You could go down the rabbit hole of like, well, how did she die?
Well, then I saw an article that came out and said the first 2 minutes of the black box was missing, you know? So, and then it's like, okay, well, if something fails, if something failed that quickly after pulling out of port, when there is a checklist that has to be gone through before you leave port, you know, and it's like, well, did they say things were working when they actually weren't working? You know, like, and then who's actually just,
those black boxes are designed to pretty much survive a nuclear attack. So just because the power goes out does not mean that that black box is going to stop working.
Right.
That thing is like, that is going to run.
And it's only the first 2 minutes. It wasn't intermittent when the boat was losing power or anything like that. It was the first 2 minutes. So it's like,
generally it makes me what I become suspicious of something like that is, well, did it not work, or did like somebody get to that black box, take the information out? And I'll be honest, I don't know much about how black boxes work, other than they're pretty impossible to destroy. But did somebody just get in there and destroy the first 2 minutes when they had access? And they go, oh, sorry, first 2 minutes are gone. And maybe it's not because China is attacking the United States to cause World War III. It might be because they did something damning that would cause an insurance company to go, oh, you forgot to do this. And you even admitted on the we have it. You're admitting that you forgot this. That is going to void a policy or something like that. I think that is far more likely.
Yeah.
And more logical. But I think what people want is they want, like, this needs to be connected to five other things. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Like, for some reason, we need that. We need that, like, well, this has to be a bigger story. Yeah,
and I think putting it into perspective, too, I mean, it was already tough trying to pull data from Google and other search engines. It was funny because there was stuff I was typing in that Google was like, there's not really a lot of information on this. And I was like, I'm just searching how many boats crashed in the past year. You know, like, what do you mean there's not a lot of information? Shouldn't there be reports on this? But I did find a report from the UK in 2019 for casualties and incidents involving large vessels, commercial vessels. And in 2019, there were 1,090 accidents involving commercial vessels. And so like
is that worldwide or just like UK vessels?
Just in UK vessels. So put it into perspective.
That's a few.
That's a lot of incidences. I'm sorry. Out of the 1,090, 730 were commercial vessels, but still 730 commercial vessels were either broken down or crashed or something like that happened to them just in 2019, just in the UK base. That's not anything talking about worldwide. So when you talk about how many boats are out there worldwide, stuff like this happens often. It's just
that could be like a little same fender bender, right? Like, you could have two boats, they bump into each other and like a small part of the boat is damaged. And yeah, they're gonna report that to an insurance company or whatever it is. I mean, it's just like a car. Like, there's thousands of car accidents, hundreds of thousands of car accidents. Most of them are very minor in damage. but they get reported because, you know, somebody wants to call the police and, you know, you do your thing and probably nothing's wrong. But I think a lot of the reason why a lot of accidents are reported are because you don't want to just give somebody your information and hope that they don't go to their lawyer and go, my neck hurts.
Yeah.
And exactly. And they didn't want to call the police and then you get screwed and, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, what I found actually broke it down to, if it's just a marine incident, like something happened in port or whatever, where maybe a ship damaged, you know, a dock or a bridge or something like that, 241 accidents, 367 were less serious, 38 were serious, and 11 incidences were very serious. So, I mean, you're talking about...
Well, 11, that's a once a month.
Yeah, like that's, and again, just the UK. So...
Yeah.
It doesn't break down exactly each one of them, but it did list quite a few of that had loss of life as well. So, I mean, if it's serious enough for someone to lose their life or multiple people to lose their life, then it would, you know, go to show that having something like this, what happened at Baltimore, like, although it's very unfortunate, a series of unfortunate events, this is not uncommon for the industry.
Yeah. And when we talk boats and then we go to trains,
right? And, like last year,
if you want to connect the two, if you marry the two, it starts to get a little crazier. And there has been a lot in the conspiracy world of, hey, there's this boat accident and there's been all these train derailments. And there's been, you know, I think the biggest one was the East Palestine one in Ohio, where, I mean, the crazy things that were happening to these people's farms and homesteads down there was so sad, because all of a sudden they're, you know, their water's contaminated. Yeah. And their crops have stuff in there. Like there was some big issues. And then now good luck selling your house in that area. I mean, you're practically screwed. You're stuck with that thing forever. Yeah. When you marry the two and you go, well, there's also all these train derailments. And it felt like after that one, all of a sudden it was, well, there was this train derailment over here and there's train derailment over here. It was like the shark attack. Like, well, this one shark attack happens and then everyone starts to talk about the shark attacks, even though there's only like 12 shark attacks a year in the United States. It's like a super small number. But when you look at, you know, you can go, okay, well, all of a sudden, yeah, there's some pretty intense train derailments, some things that have happened, boats. Well, the way to figure out if this is happening more than not is, like, let's look at the numbers by year. And I went and I found from the FRA, which is the Federal Rail Administration, you know, here's how many derailments there were. And in 2023, there were 742 train derailments. This number has been coming down tremendously. Like 2007, there were 2,100 train derailments. And if we go way back to 1978, there were 9,400 train derailments in 1978. So we're only at about 10%, less than 10%. Of what, I mean, there were like, what's that? Like 93% more. Well, actually, I guess from 700, you're talking like 1,000%, more than 1,000% more derailments 40 years ago.
And in 2022, there were 927. So just in 2022 to 2023, there were almost 200 less derailments. So significant improvements are being made in transportation systems. But even on top of that, too, I mean, you look at it, at least from the statistics I found from 2022, that out of that 927, 700 plus of those were actually done in a rail yard under 5 miles an hour. You know, so you look at mainline derailments themselves were under 220 mainline derailments. You know, and out of that, it even breaks it down that 7 of those were with hazmat and 4 with injuries. So again, it's not uncommon for train derailments to happen. It's just a matter of understanding the industry. And as much as Mark, you and I both are conspiracy nuts and loving to find a good conspiracy theory, I think this is one of those instances in which the average person just does not understand the industry. And until you get that information, everything is going to be a fear tactic, because you saw all the videos come out of everything, all this fear mongering that happened in the media through news outlets, through social media and everything. And even I saw there were videos, there was one video of a wheelman who was talking about, he was saying the exact opposite of this. He's in the industry and he's saying, actually, there's backup generators, so there would be no mechanical failure, and this is absolutely, like, you know, something planned. And it's like, dude, you're literally just feeding the fear mongering on purpose. Like, you're not trying to disprove the myth, not trying to add educational value. You're looking for your 15 minutes of fame. So it's hard to sit here and look on social media and say, oh, this guy's behind the wheel of a boat, you know, he must know what he's talking about. He's showing generator switches, you know, this has to be true. Well, just because they're behind the wheel of a boat doesn't mean that they're not trying to look for their 15 seconds of fame.
Yes. And that is, that's the difficult part about deciphering through a potential conspiracy, is that, yes, you can pull any expert you want. You know, like, let's talk about the pharmaceutical industry for a second. Like, this is where my mind keeps going back, is that, yeah, okay, there's other boat captains talking about this. This is your friend, your business partner, who's talking about, he's a captain of a boat, so he understands. But you go, well, there's doctors out there that understand that. I mean, they've peddled all sorts of bullshit for years.
Yeah.
And we don't have to get into all the specifics, because I think, you know, if you're watching our show, you probably have some idea that, you know, hey, they said that all sorts of things were good for you for a long time and turns out they weren't. Or, hey, this drug's going to be a miracle cure and let's push this drug and we'll make a bunch of money off of it. And then, oops, it doesn't actually work. And yeah, we'll pay a big fine, but we still made a ton of money off of it. So it's okay. It's a hard thing to say, well, that person's an expert, therefore they know better than all of us, so we should just ignore everything else that we see and just trust the expert kind of vibe. And I'm not saying that I don't believe Mike or like anything like that. It is something to consider, is that you go, well, just because someone's an expert doesn't mean that they're always telling the truth, because like you said, there's people out there who are peddling other BS because they want the clicks. Like, to be honest, the sexy thing is not for us to sit here and go, the conspiracies that you thought were conspiracies aren't.
Especially because a big part of our podcast is talking about conspiracies.
Yes. Yes. And certainly could, especially when you talk like the boat crashing in the bridge. Yeah. Could it be like a trial run for something bigger? Sure. I guess it could be, you know, if you want to. Yeah. Do these things happen? And that could be the underlying tone, is like, hey, these things happen. Like, you don't need to look into this. It's just a normal everyday thing. And that's totally true. And you get somebody like Mike who knows his stuff and he goes, hey, this happens all the time. Well, yes. So could you theoretically stage an event like this to test and see if it works in an area where, hey, it's a bridge, it's Baltimore. Like, Baltimore is already, you know how many people are in people's pockets in Baltimore? Like, we already know that there's plenty of people in pockets in Baltimore. So, you know, you pay the odd guy off and you kind of get away with running a test in Baltimore. I'm not saying that that's the case, but that would be, you know, that would be where you would go, is you go, well, yeah, this is normal, so that's why we can get away with it. And then let's do something else that's normal, like a train derailment. Yes, are they normal? I mean, there's still over 700 train derailments in 2023. I mean, that's a train derailment. What? That's there's like almost 70 train derailments a month. Yes. There's train derailments every single day.
Yeah, two or three train derailments a day. Like, that's crazy. Yeah.
So if that's the case, then it's pretty normal. But when you consider what happened in a place like East Palestine, and there were a couple others where there was oil spilled, and, you know, they're the bigger ones that actually cause significant damage. Those ones, it's hard not to want to lean to that side of it. Like, well, who did this? not only are should somebody be taking responsibility, like, okay, this bridge, right? Biden immediately steps in. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I got it, guys. I got it. Well, a whole freaking town in East Palestine, a huge area of it, had this horrible spill, and it was like it just got, tried to get it covered up. And the federal government wouldn't do anything for these people for the longest time. And why isn't anybody going, don't worry, we'll buy your house, we'll take care of you, or we'll give you some money, whatever it may be. That wasn't happening there. And that's where you also go, well, yeah, okay, this big bridge, this like big exposure, it's something that's an easy win for the government to go, yeah, we'll foot the bill. But then when it's real people, because let's be honest, a bridge, yes, a couple people did die from the incident, and I'm sure those people will, at least their families will hopefully get some financial benefit from it. Not that you'd want to lose your family member or anything, but something happens in that way. But it's, you're not talking about like someone's home. You're not talking about something that somebody has to go back to. Yes, it's a bridge. Yes, you got to be able to get where the bridge takes you. There's other ways around. But it's not like, hey, my home that I spent my life in is now contaminated.
Yep.
So, yeah, when you consider that. But that's because they're people with less money, so there's less exposure. So, hey, why help them?
I mean, it's just like the Flint water crisis, right, here in Michigan.
Like right.
2014, you know, they switched the water supply source, and then now the Flint residents can't drink water. Their own water supply, they can't drink it. And although it's technically like resolved, you know, 5 years later, like there's still evidence that this has not been resolved. And it's 10 years later now, literally a decade of an entire city not being able to drink the water source. And there's no big initiatives being made in order to fix this. This could have been something resolved pretty quickly. And yet there's a ton of people who are just out because it's a poor population, right? It's a low income population. They're not cared about the same as, you know, when there's not people involved like you're talking about.
And at one point it was like the murder capital of the United States. So it is not a place where people want to go. So there's not the added benefit of a financial gain, which is sad because they're people. You understand it from like a business standpoint. Like if I have a business, I'm not running it out of Flint.
Like, right.
That's the tough part is that portion of it, you can't. So but the government going in there and doing what they did, yeah, that whole incident is ridiculous. But that's happens more often than I think we think, is that those poorer cities, they just get the shit beat out of them by politicians because they don't care and they just let things happen. And oftentimes those are the places that are the easiest to get away with corruption because there aren't the people with more money to be able to go, we're not allowing this to happen.
Yeah.
And they have the ability because money gives you a voice. And when you don't have it, your voice is muted to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Which is that the way that it should be? I don't know. But is that the way that it is? 100%.
Yep. I agree. Well, for me, this has been really good. I enjoyed having Mike on today. I like talking about conspiracy theories, whether I have the information or not. I like talking about it and just stirring up the pot and seeing what comes out. But I think this is, for me, this whole bridge, you know, bridge collapse thing and looking into statistics with the trains and things like that, for me, it's kind of a reminder to like consistently dive in a little bit deeper. If you're gonna dive into conspiracy theory, dive into the facts, you know, talk and listen to people that have an expertise in from both perspectives. Find the people that are saying yes, it's a conspiracy, find the people that are saying no, it's not, and then compare the information and come to your own conclusion. You know, especially
figure out who's with the CIA.
Exactly. But I think it's a really good reminder, especially going into an election season, to do your own research. You know, I know a lot of people knock on doing your own research and not just, you know, taking the blind information given by experts. But do your own research, listen to both sides and both perspectives, and then make a decision from there.
Yeah, 100%. And with that, I will pivot and say, get outside, go plant some things, because yes, it's a fun, it's a great time to listen to our podcast. I mean, what better time could you be having? But it is time to get out. I mean, it's April 6th while we're recording this. It's a beautiful day here. We're getting into that spot. I mean, there are lots of things to plant that need a few frosts left, so you can still get out there, plant those in the ground so that they get cold stratified, and you'll have some beautiful vegetables and flowers and whatnot. So now is the time. Hopefully you get out today. Go do something. Go do something. Send it to us. Tag us in your post at Cock Talk, the podcast on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube, all the good things. We thank you for listening, and get outside.
Go outside.